This is IT Visionaries, your number one source for actionable insights and exclusive interviews with CIOs, CTOs, and CISOs, and many more. I'm your host, Albert Chow, a former CIO, former sales VP, and now podcast host. Hey there, IT Visionaries listeners. It's time to supercharge your network with Zayo, the North American leader in modern network infrastructure. Zayo connects critical data centers across the United States, Canada, and Europe with high capacity, metro fiber, and extensive long-haul dark fiber. Trusted by the world's most innovative companies, Zayo embodies what's next in networking. Discover Zayo's expansive network maps on their website and see where their network can take you. With low latency, reliable 400G and 800G enabled routes, it's the modern network solution you've been searching for. Visit Zayo's website today to unlock the power of your network and tap into the technologies of tomorrow. Go to zayo.com/network now. Welcome everyone to another episode of IT Visionaries, and today I have a special guest. His name is Raju Malhotra, and he's the Chief Product and Technology Officer at a little company called PAR Technology. Now, you listening might have never heard of this, P-A-R. Maybe you even think it's about golf, but it's not about golf. It's actually about restaurants. And you might be thinking, oh, they must be small, maybe some SMB business. No, this company's huge, publicly traded, over $1 billion of market cap, and you've definitely heard of their customers. So Raju, I got to ask you, what is PAR Technology? What does it do? And why do your customers invest in you?
Yeah, absolutely. Great to be here, Albert. PAR provides hardware and software solutions for multi-unit restaurant chains and convenience stores. So if you've ever walked into Five Guys, Sweetgreen's, Papa John's, Smoothie King, Tropical Smoothie, you actually have seen one of our products in action. And given we are a B2B2C company, you probably haven't heard the word PAR, as you said, but you obviously have heard the brand names that we work with on a daily basis.
So give us an idea of what this does, because I think a lot of us might be familiar with some of your some of the other businesses in the industry that do similar things. We talked about before we started the show, like, hey, a lot of times, for example, if I go to a small coffee shop, I'll recognize the terminal. I'll recognize the name. I'll know who's doing it. Just to name a few, like Toast and Square, like different little restaurants use those. But big companies choose you for a different reason. Give us an idea. Why? What makes your system different? And why do the big companies want to use PAR?
First part of this is there is a enterprise expectation for scalability, for robustness, and in a very simple way, it translates into it not only should work in one unit, it should really work in 10,000, 50,000 locations. And also remember, restaurant industry is the number one private employer. You know, 12 million plus mm-hmm. people working here, and there's a high level of attrition. So the technology not only has to work across, you know, tens of thousands of location, it actually should be very easy to use by the employees in the restaurants who are actually using it. So really, when it comes down to the scale, all the way from payment processing, taking orders, to managing the kitchen operations, loyalty program, we do that in a way which is very easy. And that's why the big restaurant chains, in fact, 7 out of top 10 restaurant chains use PAR technology.
So to give everyone in the audience a little flavor, some of the, if you go to a small business, maybe a small restaurant like a cafe, the system you're looking at might do maybe some checkout and some rewards, but PAR does it all from payroll, inventory, supply chain, accounting, point of sale. And we've had some, I've personally had some experience with multi-chain locations, and I understand the complexity that each unit is its own business, but then it all has to roll up to a region or a territory. And then that's got to roll up, of course, to HQ. Some of the businesses you named are franchises, and that means they're going to be franchises plus corporate mix. Give us an idea for someone listening who might not be familiar with the business problem, just some of the technological or operational challenges that your software has to kind of solve for. I just want our audience to get a scope of, like, it's not just a little terminal.
Yeah.
It's more than that.
You're absolutely right. It's not just a terminal. And I'll give you a very simple example. Say you're standing in a restaurant trying to place your order, and the Wi-Fi somehow goes off. Now, this is really a mission critical requirement for a restaurant to be able to take orders, process the payment, because most other competitors that are in the space, they require a Wi-Fi or network availability all the time. What we actually do in this case is we maintain a local cache. We can take your orders, process your payment, and when the connection is back online, we can actually, you know, send that to the cloud for reconciliation at that time. Now, that sounds like a very simple, you know, thing, and it may not be a requirement for a single unit restaurant, but this is absolutely one of the key areas where the enterprise level restaurants and the franchisees really have to rely on something that works regardless of network availability, regardless of if the employees don't show up on time, regardless of, I think, how the easy or difficult the loyalty program is for the guest's perspective. So the franchisee model actually introduces some unique complexities in the business, as you can imagine. If this was all a corporate owned, you know, thousands of locations, you can roll out technology as a IT deployment. But with the franchisee, you have to get their permission. You have to convince them that this is valuable for you. And in fact, oftentimes they have to pay into this technology. So it's a much higher bar for adoption. So it doesn't have to just work. It actually has to be essential for their operations. And that's where we come in and help the franchisees and corporate locations solve the problems of all the way taking an order in person, online, at a kiosk, through a website, through the app, and then processing that all the way, sending it to the kitchen, doing the back office operations, and if it's a loyalty customer, giving them the awards, and really kind of, you know, use that as a constant engagement to bring the customers back in the store and really kind of have that ongoing engagement with those guests.
You hit on an interesting point because, as you might know, our current season is being sponsored by Zayo, a networking solutions provider. And when you deal with these restaurants and franchisees and operations, their businesses are in every single type of territory you can imagine. They're not just in big cities. They are, as Raju just said, they're in small towns, they're in small cities. They might be in limited infrastructure, limited maybe skill at the regional area. There's all types of challenges. You mentioned just a moment ago this franchisee model, which, by the way, we sold software into franchises, and we had a little solution. We were going to charge $5 per location, and the franchisees voted it down. And I got to talk to a franchisee, and they said, we just about vote everything down because we never want to open the door for corporate to be able to insert more things, because it's not just the thing. It's more like a principle. Like, you can't tell me what to buy. And I was like, oh my God, I don't know how anything gets done. And so they were introducing that complexity. But, you know, when the way you described it, so your technology, you have to be basically, it sounds like, almost infrastructure agnostic. Is that right? Like, meaning, like, if I'm the HQ of a chain, and you have no idea where I'm going to expand. You just don't. I can expand wherever I want. So I'm assuming you have to build your technology, be infrastructure agnostic. Hey, I don't care what you have. We can fit.
We can. And I would say we work very closely with the corporate and also the franchisee groups as they scale. So oftentimes they do have plans. Yeah. They have, you know, multi-year plans for testing a technology in a new area, putting some new technology, and then expanding across different sort of, you know, geos or functionality. So we work very closely with them. That's the thing. There's a lot of predictability they expect. There's a lot of transparency in communication. And you're right. In your example, you know, by default, we expect a no. So that means the bar is very high to really be transparent with them why certain things are going to be valuable. And so the answer can go from no to yes. And it has to be kind of, you know, valuable. But we work with them as part of planning over time. And I wouldn't say it's infrastructure agnostic. I mean, that's a little bit of a tricky thing because we can't be everything to everyone all the time. If we really want to be good at some things, we pick our battles and we take that very seriously. We have requirements for when we actually will work the best. That's the environment. And we work with the franchisee and the corporate offices to create that environment, to enable them, train them, roll those implementations out, and then they can utilize the full value of their investment.
So this is where I want to dive into, like, the how, because this is where things are going to get really interesting. So now that we've kind of painted up the scale of the challenge in front of you, give us an idea of how this works, because PAR has its own hardware devices, which is smart because then that helps you know that the software can run on the hardware. There's more predictability. It's not like, you know, you're not supporting like web browsers, you know, like there's a lot of compatibility problems. But it also introduces this the same problem, which is like certain restaurants are going to upgrade at certain times, which means you have to keep reverse compatibility for quite some time. Give us an idea, because you have the hardware component and the software component. For most of our listeners, I think they only do one or the other. I don't know very many companies that do both. You're doing both. How is your team structured? How do you think about making technological investments, decision-making into features and so on? This is where things get really exciting.
Yeah.
Let's start there.
Yeah.
How do you guys decide what to build?
Yeah. So I think on a very simple basis, it's about what is the solution that we're trying to deliver that solves the problem at three levels. And I'll give you a very quick sort of overview of top three things that almost every CIO I speak with cares about. Number one, they care about guest engagement. Second, they care about their employees. As I mentioned, they have, you know, this is the largest employer, private employer. And third is they care about kitchen operations. That's, think of a kitchen as a mini factory. And except that this factory is, you know, there are thousands and thousands of those locations. It's not as automated, a lot of people doing a manual stuff, but it's really kitchen operations is really a factory. So how we think about our solution from a hardware or software perspective is really thinking about what is the best way that the guest can engage at the point of sale level, in-store, through the app, loyalty, payment system, etc. And then what type of tools are going to be needed at the employee level to deliver that experience, right, from a guest perspective. Because it's not just about delivery of food, it's the overall experience. And then how do we scale the kitchen operations and delivery of that food directly online through third-party delivery providers? So you have to keep all of those things in mind. And I would say one thing which is very important for our business, but probably for any technology business, is to be opinionated about what is the right solution you have learned works, you know, thousands and tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of locations. And being opinionated actually is very important. And we come in with our learnings with, you know, hundreds of brands that we work with and actually bring that to the software as a service and hardware and our partnerships that we have. We have over 500 partners that we can bring in. So the goal is to hide that complexity from our customer, but still provide that solution. And that's where we come in and actually really start thinking about, here is the, you know, menu of options for you. Here is what we recommend in our experience that seems to work, but we also give you flexibility. How much of this you wanna consume from PAR versus how much you wanna use from a different provider? Because in an enterprise company, you have to recommend, you have to respect the heterogeneity and the choice that CIOs have at the end of the day. So it's a very complicated solution from a CIO or customer perspective, but we make it simple through a playbook that we have learned over the time.
Give us an idea of, you mentioned this opinion, you know, you have to have an opinionated point of view. I'm assuming it's got to come from always from an experience-based or experience basis. Give us an idea of something that your opinion swayed a customer, whether it was technology or implementation of a technology. Because look, there's new chains all the time that are expanding, and you know, there's probably one right now that we don't even know about that's going to get to 1,000 locations in the next 5 years. You know, we just don't know who they are. When you meet with that CIO, when you meet with that CEO, and they're sitting down across the table from you and they're saying, this is what we want to do, and you're like, hey, but wait a second. Give us an idea of how these discussions can get swayed, because I'm sure you have tremendous stories of successful implementations, as well as, you know, whether it's with PAR or another vendor, like things that didn't work nearly as good.
Yeah. So one example, really think about every brand now has a app, online experience or sure. app or a loyalty program. And 3 out of 5 US adults use a PAR-powered loyalty program. And of course, as a B2BC, they don't know this is actually PAR providing that loyalty program, but it's really, you know, we're delivering it through the brand. And one of the interesting things that may be very non-intuitive for folks who are not in this business is that loyalty points, think of them as a monetizable currency. And anytime you have money, mm-hmm. it attracts fraud. People would go and try to steal those points, trade them, and actually take some nefarious fraudulent activities. So what we've done, you know, over time, we've actually identified a number of device fingerprinting mechanisms that we recommend that, hey, even if you're building your own loyalty app, we're not asking you to build, you know, use Power for building your loyalty app. We're going to recommend to you use this device fingerprinting software, and we can give you a couple of options. We don't have a vested interest in those partners, but do that as opposed to not doing anything at all, because then you're actually risking your guests losing potentially the loyalty points and creating a dissatisfaction for your brand. So that's where I think the opinionated point of view comes in, where we can say, you know what, we're not necessarily the ones who will do this for you. We're not in the device fingerprinting or cybersecurity or some other sort of area or network availability, but we recommend that you actually do this. And here is a checklist of things that you should do. And that's what I mean by being opinionated. And I would say almost every customer that we talk to takes us up on those recommendations, because they see this is valuable for them. And they also sometimes have suffered through the credential stuffing or some kind of fraudulent activities as their loyalty program takes off. So they basically take us up on their recommendation. So that's one example of being opinionated and really helping our customers do the thing that is right for their business.
That is fascinating. I never really thought about my rewards points at a chain getting stolen or abused or faked. You know what I mean? Like someone could somehow hack the app and load up, I don't know, million points and then get free meals for whatever period of time. It is not something I even thought about. I'm sure you guys have other stories that kind of hint at this. When it comes to like building the features, how do you guys go about building these things? Because I know you have different customers. They all have similar requirements, but I'm sure each of them also has unique things that they want from you. And so you're thinking, you know, I'm going to put words in your mouth, but you have to think baseline, is this good for all my customers? And then can I support it across all my devices that I have in the ecosystem? How do you decide what to build? Because I'm sure some people ask you things that probably aren't that good. You don't have to tell me what they are, but give us an idea. How do you make that decision? We're going to build this and all of our customers are going to benefit from it.
Really, at the end of the day, this is about what the market, you know, really cares about and where the puck is moving. A lot of times I think there's a risk in having customer research or market research and taking the wrong conclusions out of that, because customers have problems today or they have had problems in the past. We want to solve them, but we also want to solve the problems that are actually going to become opportunities or problems going forward. So very simple mechanism is we do a lot of customer advisory boards, a lot of customer research. We have products which are instrumented. We use a lot of instrumentation within the software as a service products where we know which areas our customers or users actually are struggling with. If it takes them a very long time to accomplish a task, we obviously know there's a problem. So we're getting a population level, sample level, objective, subjective feedback from the customers. And really then we have a number of themes that we think are going to be very important as a company for us to solve. And then we kind of marry those two and actually really think about it as an investment. Like, you know, many companies, we have a roadmap for next 12 to 18 months, but we are also very, very focused on what are we going to do in next 3 months and 6 months to solve some of the immediate problems, and how does that short term match to the long term. So I think that that's the very high level sort of process. But, you know, example for this is we want to make it very, very easy for guests to use payments and operators to actually get the value out of every transaction. So payment is a very huge focus for us. It has been for last couple of years, and it would be for next 12 to 18 months at least. And we really figure out how we actually make that, you know, experience much better for guests, employees, and our operators. So just as a kind of theme.
Yeah, fill me in on that, because that's an interesting thing you said that, because I, you know, when you're not in it, you often feel like it's solved. Like you know what I mean? Like I'm not in the game of payments. So I think to myself, well, how can payments get better? I don't understand. I don't have a problem paying. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I pay with my credit card. I pay with cash. I'm sure people are going to start being like, hey, I need to be able to pay with, you know, crypto. I need to pay with some holding services like a PayPal or a Venmo. I'm sure people are making requests all the time. give us an idea of when you say payments, what do you mean?
Yeah.
Payments constantly can be improved, because it's one of the things where I'm sitting here like I don't have any problem paying. Maybe I don't know.
I think this is actually an interesting point about innovation. Is the moment we start seeing what's possible, you actually become dissatisfied with what has been working all along. So let me actually explain to you where payments actually work well. So yes, I think the whole idea of taking a payment, cash, credit card, that actually has worked out well. Restaurants do a great job. Everybody, almost everybody I know actually does a good job. But that's not actually what we are focused on. For example, we have a product that we are launching and rolling it out to our customers, and we call it one-tap loyalty. And one-tap loyalty, if there are some magical payment experiences, by the way, this is it. I will give you this sort of what this sort of, you know, looks like, because you can walk into a restaurant and use your Apple Watch or phone, and through that, you not only pay, you earn your loyalty points. And if you have any points left, you can redeem your points all in one tap, and you can be out. Now, the whole experience of this is so easy, so smooth, that actually you have to really experience it to see the why I actually call it magical. And we worked with Apple. We have a partnership with Apple to roll it out, to work with them, with the Apple Pay team. And it's a very Apple-like consumer experience that guests absolutely love. And the whole experience is, of course, I'm actually walking into a place like Salsarita, which is a, you know, Mexican cuisine chain. You want the taco or the burrito, but if you actually had this delightful experience of how you got it through the payment, and you didn't even have to think about loyalty, and you already got the points, and if you had points, you can use them. It really brings that consumer very close to the brand. And that's what we are seeing. They come back, they actually consume the product they already love, and the overall experience is much more elevated. So that's the example of payment, where we don't just think about the transaction, we think about how we can improve loyalty, redemption, earning, and the overall guest experience much, much better.
Hey there, IT Visionaries listeners. It's time to supercharge your network with Zayo, the North American leader in modern network infrastructure. Zayo connects critical data centers across the United States, Canada, and Europe with high-capacity metro fiber and extensive long-haul dark fiber. Trusted by the world's most innovative companies, Zayo embodies what's next in networking. Discover Zayo's expansive network maps on their website and see where their network can take you. With low latency, reliable 400G and 800G enabled routes, it's the modern network solution you've been searching for. Visit Zayo's website today to unlock the power of your network and tap into the technologies of tomorrow. Go to zayo.com/network right now. So when you describe that, I'll be fully transparent. I don't eat out enough, right? I'm not like a huge restaurant person, although I see you work with, it looks like some hotels and stuff too. But the way you described it reminded me of flying. Or staying in a hotel where you get to make a decision like, hey, am I going to pay cash? Am I going to pay credit? Am I going to pay points? Am I going to pay a combo? Like, some people like paying with a combination and give themselves like a 30% discount, but they still want to earn rewards and all that other stuff. And you're saying you want to make it to like a single tap interface, or possibly even some defaults. I'm sure you want to get it to the point where a customer can just set a default and be like, this is how I prefer to pay.
Exactly. Exactly. It's very easy. You don't even have to think about it. And think from a brand perspective, actually. The number one problem they have is to get more customers into their loyalty program, because they know once you know the identity of a customer and they are part of the loyalty program, the lifetime value of that customer is 500%.
Just like the airline.
It's like airline. Super, super valuable. Now, this is where something like one-tap loyalty comes in. Suppose you're actually not a loyal customer of a brand, but you go and actually pick up the pizza, pick up burgers or the tacos. The first time you pay from Apple Pay, which, you know, we've seen a huge adoption of, it actually adds a little notification in your Apple wallet if you want to sign up for the loyalty program. And guess what?
So I don't have to make the decision right there.
You don't have to make the decision. You can just actually not block the line, just kind of go. And guess what? You don't have to download an app. You basically have your loyalty card sitting in the Apple wallet, so to speak. And next time you're visiting that brand, it recognizes you're actually visiting that brand. you can pay. And if you have accumulated loyalty points by that time, you can redeem them too. So that's why it's actually so powerful, because it actually onboards new customers into the loyalty program and creates so much more value for engagement from the brand perspective.
Yeah, yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah, the amount of technological complexity that goes into simplicity is is pretty cool. Now, there's another thing that's happening in the restaurant industry that I don't know if it's a problem or not. It feels like a problem, but I don't know if you would agree that it's a problem, is the rise of third-party services that are now possibly impacting the business. So if I'm the business and we make the food and we want a great experience for a customer, but it gets picked up by a third-party app, a Grubhub, an Uber Eats, a DoorDash, there's new challenges, right? Like, I'm sure you got to integrate my inventory system. You got to integrate my payment system. You got to integrate, I don't know, something else that allows me to put the orders up, track the order. I don't know what's going on really, but I do know that a lot of the complaints is part of that process, that process, like, right? Well, some people make complaints where they'll probably complain about the restaurant, but it's not really the restaurant's fault. It's the driver's fault, or I don't know. It's a new thing. This didn't exist just a handful of years ago. How is that becoming something that the restaurants themselves want more integrations? Like, they're telling you, hey, yeah, I need this integrated. I don't want two separate systems doing this.
Yeah. So it's interesting. You mentioned, I think, two points, and I think those are two different points. One is the challenges of integration, and we can talk about it. I think with the rise of different systems and complexity, especially in the larger chains, integration is actually a huge problem or an opportunity. But the second thing you mentioned is about the rise of the delivery service providers, the DSPs, the DoorDash, Uber Eats, and Grubhub, and the likes,
all
right?
Of them.
So, you know, remember a few years ago, way, way, way back when the COVID was just starting, and that effectively changed the mindset of digital transformation from a nice to have to a must have. For
must.
Restaurants.
Yeah, must. Yeah.
And especially if you were a small business, say 1, 2, 5 unit chain, it was very easy for you to start with a third-party delivery service provider, the DSP, to start taking orders online, and you have the kitchen, you have some of the staff, and you basically start delivering those. But I don't know if many people know this, that even though this is a very valuable service for brands, they pay for it. They pay even up to 20% or 30% of their check amount to the DSPs as part of getting that customer in and delivering that food. So, and we work with all the DSPs, they're our partners. And I'm not suggesting that's actually a wrong point, because they are delivering a very valuable service. But for many brands, you know, paying 20, 30% of your margin through the DSP is a challenge. And the other challenge is they never get the guest data directly to them. So they can't, they may not know this is Albert who's actually consuming my food through DoorDash, because their relationship is probably with the delivery service provider, not necessarily with the brand, even though they are actually consuming that brand's food. So there is there's a complexity there, which, and that's where I think, especially the bigger brands are trying to get that direct customer engagement. They are trying to even build their own first party delivery services, like Domino's has their own dispatch service. And we offer a service where if a brand wants to have their own delivery service, they can. If they want to use the delivery service for delivery after someone has come through their app, you know, they come to their app and they basically want to get delivered, they can actually do that through third party delivery service, et cetera. So we offer a lot of options there. And the idea here is, we know that many brands want to build that direct engagement with their customers as opposed to going through DSPs, which was a necessity a couple of years ago, but may not be as much of a necessity going forward, especially as you think about growing your business. So that's, I think, one point where we give tools to the brands to build that direct connection and give them effectively a very easy software as a service tool set that actually helps them scale as if they actually had a DSP.
You're describing all this. I'm just thinking about it. Man, this is so complicated. Like, it's just, you know what I mean? Like, for me to, let's say, order a chicken sandwich, all these steps that have to happen. Like, if I were to order a chicken sandwich through an app, a delivery service provider app, It's got to show up in the order. It's got to show up in the inventory that one is down, that it's got to show up in the accounting that the margin is paid. It's got to show up in the consumer data. And then you have players that want to obfuscate, or maybe more advanced, less advanced. Like, there's always going to be introducing. This is not going to stop, like, to what your point. Like, this is, we've forever transformed. I'm old school. So like, the idea of paying $5 extra for a meal is unacceptable to me. I won't do it. But like, I know that my like cousins who are in their 20s, they think it's no big deal. Like, they're just fine with it. I'm like, oh man, I can't. And it won't stop, because there's going to be other service part. There's going to be another service provider someday coming up somewhere that's going to bring a new service that we never thought of. And it's going to add to the complexity.
Yes.
For sure.
Yes. Yes. Power to them. I think it's a different consumers, different expectations. I think the trick is to hide that complexity and simplify that complexity from the restaurant and also from the guest. Because at the end of the day, restaurant business is very simple. Restaurants are actually in business because they want to prepare food that their customers love. And everything else, I think, is really something we can help on from a technology and process and compliance and everything else perspective. In fact, our mission of the company is food, people, nothing in between. And we do want to make it as easy as, you know, delivering your food, giving your food, making it available to your customers without anything anything else that you should worry about.
So give us an idea. How did you get in? Because when I hear you talk about this stuff, I recognize fully that there's tons of technology that has to be tested. One of the things I think about is the tightness of margins in restaurants, right? And so like, they're going to want tight inventory controls, tight costing controls, tight everything. Like, everything's got to be tight. They can't allow missed orders, failed orders, like you to double process orders, right? Every time you do that, it's potentially catastrophic, right? They're operating on the razor's edge. And then also, you already said it, the restaurant industry, the hospitality industry is notoriously high turnover, right? A lot of staff goes through, so it's got to be easy to train. That, so like, you also have to mitigate user error, because that if I accidentally key or take too many items, that's going to cost, because restaurants, one of the only places, right? If I grab a food item and I throw it on the grill, I probably can't, you know, some places I can sell it again. It'll eventually get bought, but other places it can't. It's a custom order. It's not going to get bought, right? This is not a pen. I can't restock food. Pens, I can restock. Give us an idea of like what you guys do to make sure these processes are as efficient as possible, because it just seems like you're playing a space that's high demand. Of course, there's a huge need for it, but it, like the errors, when you make errors, it's huge. Like, it's a huge problem.
So one of the beliefs we have is, if you can solve a problem at a architecture or design level, you actually effectively solve 10 times, you know, of the pain, which may come at the production operations level. And what I mean by that is we do really think about a shift left approach where, you know, if you think about the product development process, where you have design, architecture, code, test, deploy, and operate, you know, on the right-hand side, we really want to think about how to design the products and services at the architecture level that are scalable in production, that are well-tested, that are deployed in a way that actually works for our customers and for the scale. So, as an example, we have a dev environment where we do a lot of testing, functional, non-functional testing. We're doing load testing to make sure the latency and availability of the services is available for our customers. And then in the production environment, we also have canaries where we are probing our production environment for problems ourselves. So we discover our problems before customers discover them. Right. So there is a sort of approach of being very proactive in managing that experience and expecting that things will fail at multiple levels and being prepared, first of all, not to have them fail. So you architect, but you can only architect them in a certain way. In the real world, things will fail. And when they fail, we reduce the mean time to resolution as much as possible through a number of DevSecOps techniques that we use. So really, I think this is where I think a ton of focus on how we can solve those complex problems by building and operating software that really, you know, not only scales, but really works for the customers we are trying to make it work.
Give me an idea how long features are in test before they ship to prod.
You know, in some cases, I'm talking about maybe 2 weeks or so. So one sprint, we will put them in pre-prod. We do the load testing. We do the, you know, other performance testing, security testing, et cetera. And then we roll them out. And we roll them out, not necessarily every customer gets everything at the same time. We roll them out gradually. And in many cases, we actually develop some major architectural changes that are in development and pre-production for months. And that's okay, mm-hmm. because I think those complexities potentially create more risk further down the road. So we want to mitigate and identify those risks at the dev and test level before we move them to pre-prod or prod.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think, like, because I see, of course, how many different companies are on your website, and I can do some homework. You're publicly traded. I can get an idea of how many people are using your product. Give us an idea. How many transactions at lunchtime? I'm sure you have the number. I want to know. How many transactions, how many orders are processed at lunchtime through the PAR system on a daily basis? Do you have any idea of how many transactions are being run?
I don't have the number of that specific number, but actually I'm looking at a real-time dashboard.
Give me some stats on how active this product is.
So I can tell you, we're talking, 1.5 billion transactions annually. And we're talking about, so the scale here is in billions, yeah. as opposed to, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions. And, we are effectively, you know, the volume of payments, for example, just in last few months since we launched payments, we've done $5 billion of payment processing through PAR. So the scale, as you can imagine, we're working with some largest chains, and it's a humongous scale. So to ensure things are working, you have to really orchestrate dev and test in such a way that leaves very little room for error.
So I did some simple math. You said 1.5 billion annually.
Yeah. Actually, I'll give you one more. So that is only from our point of sale system. On the loyalty software, we actually connect with 42 point of sale systems. One of them is the PAR wow. point of sale system. That's where we are processing 5 billion transactions a month. 5 billion transactions Dude. A month on the loyalty system, which is, you know, as I mentioned, 3 out of 5.
That's crazy. That's 3 times more than you said you do 1.5 billion transactions a year in cash.
Correct.
And you do 5 billion a month in
Yeah. So 60 billion.
Loyalty.
So 60 billion a year through our loyalty system, because, you know, a lot of companies say they are open platform, open, you know, web platform, open standards. But this is really gets to the core of what it means to be a enterprise level open platform. We are processing our loyalty program through all the possible point of sale systems that exist in the restaurant and convenience store industry. And that's where we are integrated with 42 other point of sale systems. And that's why we are processing 60 billion transactions 1 year. 1.5 billion okay. of those okay. are through our point of sale system. So that's the difference.
All right. So to give you an idea, to give our audience an idea, let's not even talk about the 60 billion. Let's just talk about the $1.5 billion transactions that are going through PAR on an annual basis. That breaks down to, and if you divide by 365, then divided by 12. I didn't divide by 24 because most businesses aren't open 24 hours a day. They're probably not even open 12 hours a day, but I'm just going to say 12 because, like certain hours, there's not a lot of order volume. That works out to 342,000 orders, 342,465 and change orders per hour for 12 straight hours. And that's not including their loyalty, which is actually substantially bigger. Loyalty, 5 billion transactions a month. Okay, Raju, I would say you've engineered a pretty good system. I would say your testing has to be pretty much flawless. There's a lot of transactions going on. I mean, I want people to think about the level and scale that Par and Raju are dealing with. Let's say there's a bug that is double ordering. Just imagine, right? Like, you know, when you use an app or use the website and you get that spinning effect, and a lot of times there's like certain checkouts, like, hey, only click it once. You might accidentally double order. But of course, if you double order at a restaurant, they're going to refund your second order, but they got to eat the food that they made for you. I mean, it would be an absolute catastrophe. This product is why Raju and his team have to test so much to give us an idea of what he's dealing with. And I can see why customers that are at scale need a system like yours. All right, Raju, super fascinating. The enterprise scope and scale of restaurant business is fascinating. So I got to ask, how did you end up here? Did you already know the problem existed? Did you just say yes to a classified ad and just like kind of show up one day and we're working on some stuff? Give us an idea how you got involved in this industry and, of course, how you became such a, you know, so knowledgeable in it, really.
So I joined Par through the acquisition of Punchh, which is a loyalty startup based in San Francisco Bay Area. And before I was at Punchh, I had worked at some large companies like Microsoft and Salesforce for many years, and also at startups. So I've really been fascinated by the engineering and product scale. But through the Punchh experience, that gave me a very big insight into the problems that restaurants have, particularly the enterprise, multi-chain, large restaurant chains. And then having been part of Par for the last couple of years, that scope now is more than just loyalty, but really to help Par customers solve their, you know, all the kind of challenges, opportunities around point of sale, payments, back office, kitchen operations, ordering, and of course, loyalty also.
So you got acquired through loyalty, and then you've been learning about all these other operations. Give us an idea. Typically, when a bigger company acquires a smaller company, it sounds like you have a lot of big company experience with Microsoft and Salesforce. Was there ever a point where you were just introduced to a problem like, wow, I've never solved a problem this big before? Do you remember what that was? Or were you always like, hey, I know how to do this?
I absolutely have the humility to acknowledge that I think the problems that we're solving at Par, in many ways, the horizontal SaaS companies, I would say Microsoft and Salesforce, for example, are horizontal SaaS companies. They actually don't have the level of expertise or depth to solve the vertical SaaS problems that the restaurant industry has, because you really have to not just solve for a restaurant cloud type of problem, but you have to make it work with the workflows, omnichannel experience, in-store, online, through notification, through SMS, email, and app notification. So you really have to take a very holistic view, and that level of complexity is actually very unique to Par, and the scale is very unique. So I absolutely have been humbled, but also it's exciting. I think it's 1% better every day, learning that experience and working very closely with our customers who are pushing the limits of our technology. What we provide to them is absolutely fun and exciting.
So the way you just described it, and I'm thinking full circle to the top of the conversation when you said, hey, when you buy, if you get a truly great experience, you will think it's like, you know, it's like nothing short of magic. Like they always say about good software, like good software should feel like it's almost magical to you. And I'm thinking about one chain in particular, and it's the only chain's app I have on my phone. And they've made ordering so preposterously simple, and the service is faster if you use the app. That's the number one reason why I use it. It's not even because I like the food. It's because it's one of the things my kids will eat. So I know that I can get it fast. They've created a line specifically for the app. If anyone's listening, they're probably like, I can figure out who this is. This is like the level, I think, of service that probably a lot of operations. I mean, it's more than technology, right? The whole operation is designed this way. But like that's what I think a lot of everyone wants to get to, where the guest thinks that much, that highly of that business. And like you've already kind of hinted at it, it's incredibly complex to make it that easy.
I don't want to play the guessing game, but I think I can guess which company or companies you may be talking about. Here is the interesting part. Whichever company you're thinking of, and I can guess which one it is, they probably have invested maybe tens or hundreds of millions of dollars of bespoke IT investment in building the stack that they actually have to deliver that magical experience. The difference for PAR is that we want to bring that same level of value without having you invest in the old school way of kind of building your own bespoke custom stack. We deliver that through software as a service. So the business model is very easy for you to consume. You can, you know, change your mind. You can do something else afterwards. You have a lot of flexibility. And at the end of the day, you can really focus on delivering that food and that experience that, you know, got you into the restaurant business in the first place. So I think that's the main difference here is if you were to do what this brand that you're talking about at thousands and tens of thousands of brand scale, you really need a SaaS platform that we offer you.
There you go. There you go. Raju, I want to say thank you for joining us today on the show. It was fun hearing about all the challenges that you attempt to solve. And, you know, for anyone out there listening, it really is impressive the scale of which this business is operating and how challenging it really is to operate a multi-unit business with, like you said, the blend of franchises and corporate stores, mobile ordering, text ordering, email ordering, online ordering, in-store ordering. It all comes out of the same kitchen and everyone is expecting the same. Everyone, no one expects any different. And, plus loyalty. And it's a challenge. And I appreciate you doing it because I've been there in a line when things don't work and it's not fun.
Thank you, Albert.
Thanks for joining us today on IT Visionaries.